and welcome to Focus on the Delaware Valley. I'm Laura Lewis, and with me today, Gary Handler, real estate broker, an appointee to the Pennsylvania Department of Drugs and Alcohol Advisory Council. How do you like to be described? Former user, alcoholic? How do you like to be described? I'm just throwing you off right now.
As far as the drugs,
mm-hmm.
I like to be described as being in recovery for almost 36 years.
And part of that is, most of you know Gary Handler, though, as the host of Clean and Sober Radio, which is heard on some Beasley Media Group stations. So, Gary, is it fun to sit across on the other side for a change?
Yeah, it's great. I don't have to think as much. You know, as you know, when you're hosting, you have to constantly be on. The questions you ask me, I know all the answers.
Okay, so then here we're going to go have at her. As a radio host, can you describe what is Clean and Sober Radio?
Clean and Sober Radio is a it's a part of Clean and Sober Media, and it's a company that encompasses radio. It encompasses being a resource for people who want treatment. It encompasses the whole gamut of working with the community to help those who want treatment to get into treatment.
It sounds like everything has one sort of motive behind it all, and that is helping others find the recovery that you discovered from this business, you know, from Clean and Sober Media, from the radio show, the resources, and then serving on the committee as well. Is this like a duty that you feel you owe?
It's not that I feel that I owe it. First of all, it's amazing. You know, I was interviewed with somebody else recently, and I kicked off the recovery month in the Capitol in Pennsylvania. I emceed the whole show. And it was sort of like, oh my God, I can't believe I went from a full-blown addiction to standing in front of the governor, secretaries of departments. So the feeling is I feel very grateful and I feel very blessed that I have been given so much in recovery that I want to give back. And it gives me special pleasure when I see or hear that we've helped somebody.
And do you want to give a quick recap of your own personal history? Because you started experimenting very young.
I was 4 months old. No, I'm kidding. I did start experimenting. We called it junior high school then. It's middle school now. I developed a full blown addiction to a drug called Quaalude for many, many years. It was actually classified as a hypnotic. I was in the music business in Philadelphia where I made a lot of records hits on the radio stations in Philly. So it is ironic that I'm back on a radio station now. So I had a lot of trouble growing up, a lot of arrests. And an addiction I couldn't beat until I went into rehab in May the 4th, 1982.
You had an exceptional childhood, though. You were exposed to the media, the record business. You had a home life that I think you've described as distant, or that they weren't they didn't intervene, or they were hands off parents. But it was a well to do family, and you met and dealt with a lot of amazing people.
My family was. I think they were more afraid, didn't understand, weren't educated on the craziness that I brought to the family. Yeah, and I was exposed to things at a very young age, 14, 15, that most people have never experienced. And a lot of these experiences produced lifelong friends with a lot of famous entertainers and disc jockeys that I'm still in touch with today. But for someone with an addictive personality, with access to money and drugs, it was very combustible, shall we say. And it did combust at a certain point.
Were you a victim of the circumstances then? Or had you been in another household, if you'd just been stuck at school and not working in the record business after school, for crying out loud, if you weren't driving a sports car at 16, would you still have, do you think, then issues with this? The way you just described yourself.
Yeah. I do believe that with my personality and the twisted way that I viewed things, if I didn't have access to the money through the music business, I probably would have stolen whatever I wanted. Sad to say.
So you, I don't even know how to frame the next question then. Are you saying that there was no hope you were going to do this? You were on that route and you were doing it from an early age and you were going to do it no matter what?
Yeah, nobody was going to stop me. And nobody did stop me until the law intervened and multiple arrests. for burglary, forging prescriptions. Forging prescriptions was a big thing. What else? Yeah, I mean, and the burglaries were as a result of my addiction because mm-hmm. I wasn't in my right mind or with people who were not in their right mind.
So you were surrounded by others who are in the same business and the same and in the same addiction that you are at this time.
Yeah, I mean, I sort of had to be. I couldn't. I had to be with people that were not, as I would have viewed them, above me, because that would have made me feel even more horrible about the situation I was in. So I would stick with the losers. Now I try to stick with the winners. I mean, I was treated in my family as, you know, like this nice little kid just trying to keep me in control, trying for them to keep me under control. And in my family, most everybody was a professional, lawyer, doctor. And then there was me, who was a drug addict. It was a big burden, which I would medicate myself. Mm-hmm. So I wouldn't have to think about it. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't have to think about my friends who had moved on. That was the worst for me. They've moved on. I'm left in the dust. The other memory I have that was incredibly horrible for me would be I would be up all night, and at about 6 o'clock, I'd start to hear birds chirping and buses moving and people shuffling along, and I'm sitting there with nowhere to go except wondering where my next high is or doctor's appointment, because most of the drugs that I took were prescribed to me.
And you burned out early, though. You flamed out spectacularly and early. And you were a smart guy, too. And you conned your way into law schools.
That's true.
I mean, yeah, you did a lot of amazing things that showed that you were a really bright guy. And you did. You flamed out spectacularly and early enough to have another life.
That's a very good point. Yeah, I was lucky enough to flame out, as you say, early. I know now that people are getting treatment even much earlier. I was 29. I know people in treatment 18, 19, 20 years old. That's a very difficult task because, you know, you're growing up with all the craziness. But right, I am lucky that I was able to stop it and have another life, as you say.
What about your family? And you're saying, how did they respond to your problem? Did they just ignore it totally, like they ignored the fact that you were a kid driving sports cars? And why did you have money that you shouldn't have?
Yes. The answer is yes. They didn't understand it. I know my mother thought I was going to die. I know that. They didn't understand it. And also, Laura, you have to remember, 35 years ago, the awareness of addiction was not like it is today. You know, oh, he's a crazy kid. He's having fun. He's, you know, all that kind of stuff. Yeah, there was at least in my family and in our circle, people were unaware of what was going on.
Well, there was definitely no clean and sober back then. The only thing you would ever hear about addiction would be when a celebrity would do something totally off the wall, and they would say, well, he's going into treatment, or she is going to Betty Ford. And that was the extent of talking about the problem. And it was always a celebrity. It was never the guy down the street. It was never someone's kid or your own family member that you said, well, we're trying to find a good rehab center for him.
And if it was your family, you didn't talk about it at all. You know, it's better now. It's not great. But back then, you did not talk about it.
And yet now you are talking about it. What changed or what happened? Are you part of the reason that it's out on the open today? Or
I don't think I'm part of the reason. I think I help the cause. I think it's just the times are changing. That's really what it is. And I think that a lot of people who wouldn't have spoken about this subject have been affected by it. I'm talking about politicians and other famous people. They've been affected, and now they have come out, and so it's just building. It's building like a snowball going down a hill.
Do you want to talk about, well, first talk a little bit about the format of Clean and Sober and who participates in the show? Who talks about addiction on that? And then I would like to talk more about what's going on out there today. What's the sense of what's happening and what are some of the solutions we can come up with?
Sure. So on my show, Clean and Sober Radio, we have very famous politicians, sports figures, entertainers who have gone through addictions and are in recovery now. And then we also have local folks, regular people, who actually I find even more interesting, who talk about their addictions and road to recovery. That's who come on the show. That's who our audience is. And that's what we have, you know. So what's going on today? Well, as we just discussed, the awareness is out there. The epidemic. I'm just going to talk about heroin right now because, look, you know, heroin is a big deal right now. It's getting a lot of press, but there's still people hooked on many other drugs, many other. So the deal with heroin is, especially now that it is laced with fentanyl and carfentanil, that you can die with one injection. So that's become a big deal. We lose about 20 to 2,500 people a week in the United States of overdoses from heroin alone. They're reported deaths. So how does somebody get on heroin? They usually start off, and the figures are 80% start off from a doctor's office. They get a sprained ankle. The doctor writes them a prescription for oxycodone. And instead of writing a prescription for 10 pills, they write a prescription for 160. Most of the prescriptions are totally unnecessary after a week, but you can become hooked on this stuff very, very quickly. Now, the person who's hooked on it needs to go back to the doctor and get more. The doctor's visit's expensive, so now they go out on the street, and heroin is pretty cheap to get high, very cheap now. And they hit themselves up, and it's Russian roulette. You could die on the first injection or not. We have passed in Harrisburg, and I was a part of it with my department, the prescription monitoring program, which now makes all physicians and pharmacists, it makes them go on our website and check and see if this patient in front of them has been doctor shopping, which means they're going to 10, 15 doctors, four doctors to get the same drugs. The doctor at that point should not prescribe medication, and if they do, the pharmacist should not fill the prescription. So this has slowed down the pipeline of opioids onto the street, mainly because the doctors are afraid now that they can lose their licenses.
I've heard your show. You've had a physician on who actually spent time in prison for
2 weeks ago.
Prescription writing.
He did 6 years for it. So it's no joke, there's a big responsibility for these for the medical community now to watch out what they're doing.
Are they required to do the prescription system? Are they? Is this something? And is it at every level at the hospital or just a physician's office, et cetera? I'm only asking because, you know, I recently broke a bone and I tore a ligament off. And I was asked by several therapists and people along the way, what are you taking for it? And I said, nothing. I'm not taking anything for it. But they were trying to get me to take something for it.
I know. It's amazing. So let me explain that to you. So last year, it was either the beginning of 17 or the end of 16. In this state, Governor Wolf signed a measure that stated a couple things. Number one, doctors and pharmacists must be a part of the prescription monitoring program to keep their licenses. Number two, all students in medical schools in Pennsylvania now must take a certain amount of courses dealing with addiction and recovery, addiction mainly. That was never done. There was no programs for doctors. Third, emergency room doctors can only prescribe enough medication. I think it's for either 3 days or 2 days, and then you have to go see your regular doctor. So a lot of this stuff is it's not a perfect system, but it is helping. It definitely is helping.
Are we blaming the medical profession to begin with? And what was it in the '90s with the pain measurement scale that suddenly made pain more important to them? Or are we blaming the pharmacists, the pharmacy companies themselves?
We're blaming the pharmacy companies themselves. Doctors are just uneducated, mainly uneducated. Some are criminal, but mainly uneducated. The pharmaceutical companies knew, and there's documentation, what they were putting out there. As a matter of fact, one of the large pharmaceutical companies had fired half of their sales staff and will no longer promote the oxycodone or OxyContin medications. The attorneys generals from this from the country, from each state, are now preparing lawsuits against pharmaceutical companies. So, you know, but, you know, it's almost like the barn door is open. And we just, you know, what is the solution? I think this is going to have to play itself out. I don't know how many years until maybe the next, I'm not saying generation, but certain age groups, you know, who have heard the horror stories of the generation before them don't want to take a risk and try it. That's the only thing I can see. And then what will most likely happen, because humans are humans, another drug will emerge.
Are we seeing where we get sweeping epidemics that just come along? We've already dealt with crack, and now we're dealing with heroin. We worried about the psychopharmaceuticals?
What was the question again?
I lost track there. I mean, is this something that we can just expect because we are people? And as soon as and you almost described it as a fad that, well, when the next generation sees heroin, they'll find something else.
Yeah, I do believe that in the near 100-year future, until this whatever it is when it is in our systems, not a part of our lives anymore. I'm hoping that society. And has started, the attitude has been treatment, 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 not incarceration, except for the dealers. This is a disease. It's a sickness. You know, everybody's heard it. It's just like diabetes. Yeah, it's just like any other one there, you know, except there's a stigma on this one, but it's sorting itself out. The people are starting to understand. And especially if it happens in your family, then you really understand, you know, unfortunately, that this is something, you know, people out on the street in Kensington are shooting up. They don't want to do that. It's a horrible, horrible life. But your brain has become rewired and you don't know any other way.
Let's get some business out of the way. If someone would like more information about this, how do they find Clean and Sober Media?
They can go on our website, cleanandsoberbroadcasting.com. And phone numbers will be on there, treatment centers. You can leave a message. We will respond. There is also a 1-800-662 helpline. And this is for real, that they will get you some kind of help. We had 15,000 or over 15,000 calls last year, and 8,500 people received some kind of assistance. Now, what happened to the other 85? It could have been people just, you know, seeing what the website was about. They could have gotten scared if they got off the phone. But there are the resources out there, and there's a lot of great treatment centers in this area.
This is Focus on the Delaware Valley. I'm Laura Lewis. We're talking to Gary Hendler, who is a real estate broker. I want to also keep emphasizing that you've got this wonderful life now. You have a full, complete life. You have your mission. You have your vocation. You have family. You have everything now that you tried really hard to prevent happening. And you're also the host of Clean and Sober Radio, which is heard on some Beasley Media stations. And again, if you'd like to reach out and find out more information, cleanandsoberbroadcasting.com. And you can watch the show on Facebook as well, where you are Clean and Sober Radio. The National Drug and Alcohol Treatment Hotline, call them at 1-800-622-HELP. And of course, there are resources for wherever you are, where you are hearing this. You can start at your county and your health departments, etc. There is help out there. And we've heard this from others that are saying, but so now, let us wrap this up. I'm not going to ask you any more questions. I'm just going to throw something on the table here and then let you have at her. Okay?
Okay, go ahead.
Because now you are working with the advisory council here, and you're in the industry. You're in the business of recovery at this point. So what can we do? We've discovered we can't legislate it away, but what can we do when we talk about the librarians who are armed with
Narcan?
Thank you, Narcan.
Narcan, yes.
We talk about librarians armed with Narcan,
yes,
and extending those kind of programs. We talk about now in Philadelphia the safe injection sites. We're talking about more physician and pharmacy training programs. But what about the basic interventions? What are things that can work?
Well, you cannot, you're correct, legislate recovery, but you can legislate treatment, okay? We need more treatment centers is what we need. People need to know there's a place to go, and we need the insurance companies to pay for treatment. I mean, this is a major issue. We need insurance companies to pay for treatment, not to turn their backs on this. I don't know what else.
What about programs like safe injection sites? And I've heard you on the show argue this with your co-host. Some of you, most of you in favor, and then somebody else will say, but it would not have helped me at the time.
Okay, safe injection sites, which actually have just been approved in the city of Philadelphia, but not approved anywhere else in the state. I believe, and for our listeners, safe injection sites are someone with an addiction, an IV addiction, injection addiction, go to a site and get clean needles. Also incorporated in that is educating on treatment available to these people. I am totally for it. You know, the old cliche, if it saves one person's life, it's worth it. I believe. Now there's going to be and is a big pushback because nobody wants this in their neighborhood. So this is going to play out in some way, but I believe it's coming, and I think it's a good thing.
Nobody wants it in their neighborhood, but yet they do have addiction in their neighborhood because it crosses all lines. And you talked about your own personality, and I made a point of your own personality here.
Yeah.
What about intervention? If someone has a family member, a friend, an employee, or maybe it's your boss, does intervention ever work, and how does one go about it?
Yeah, intervention works sometimes, and this is how it goes. First of all, you need to get a professional to do the intervention. You just can't have your mother and your father and your cousins and all. You need somebody who knows how to control a situation because it could get out of hand. So I would call one of the rehabs in the area and tell them that you want to do an intervention. Can you recommend somebody who specializes in organizing and pulling off an invention? Usually it's family, it's employers who, you know, get the person, you know, and say, look, this is what you're doing to us. You're going to lose your job if you don't get help. All these consequences. And some people listen to it, and some people don't.
What about forced rehab?
There is no forced rehab.
Is there no?
Unless it's mandated by courts in some way. No forced rehab. There's forced incarceration if you don't get sober and you're doing criminal activities, but there's no forced rehab.
What happens when you overdose? What happens when you are in a hospital situation and you end up that you are in a treatment facility? Will it take if you go through a withdrawal in a situation like that?
There's a program called a soft handoff, okay? And what this is, somebody overdoses, they're laying on the ground, the police come, the medics come, and they give them Narcan and it brings them up, and they will try to persuade the person to get into treatment. I don't know the exact words they use. You want treatment, you want jail, but they try to push the treatment. It's called a soft handoff. But there's no, look, people overdose 10, 20, 30 times, and they come out of it, and they keep going with their lives, if you want to call them lives.
What's the help for the family, then? What can they do?
There are many 12-step programs for the family. Nar-Anon, Al-Anon, programs like that. They're sort of like AA meetings, except it's for the people that are affected by the person using. And they're very helpful because it shows people that you're not alone.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's a support group.
Does it help in learning methods to deal with a family member where you're not, what's that, the evil word with a capital E, enabling?
Sure, it does. The evil word, enabling, yeah.
It's used so often, but nobody defines it. What is enabling?
Enabling is taking somebody, a loved one, a friend who's in addiction, and allowing them to continue in addiction. You know, they crash their car, buy them a new car. They have nowhere to live. Get them an apartment. All those kind of things that are prolonging the person's addiction is enabling. You know, it's always been, you know, you need to let somebody hit rock bottom where they have no alternatives except to give up, surrender, and go into treatment. And that's what hopefully people get to quicker now than before. Before it was you're rock bottom, you're living under the trestles or the train tracks. Now you don't have to go that low, hopefully, to go in and get treatment.
And when somebody goes to your website, what do they find? Because you talk about your resources.
Okay. They will find, I can recall three specific treatment centers that they can contact and go on the website. Hit the treatment center. I'll take it to their website. There are phone numbers at the bottom for AA, NA. There are phone numbers for other groups in Philadelphia, support types of groups, organizations. So they can find a lot of stuff. They can listen to the radio shows, the old radio shows that we do here, and see what we do. And it just gives people hope when they see our website. Because when we do the show, around the table, there could be 100 years of sobriety from people who nobody would have bet on them, you know, coming out of the deep, dark despairs that they were living. So it's helpful to see people do recover. I always say that there's no delivery of recovery and there's no drive-throughs. You have to want it and you have to go get it, but it's there. It is definitely there.
And is that your parting word?
That's my parting word.
So again, for more information, go to cleanandsoberbroadcasting.com and you will find resources there. And wherever you may be hearing this, the National Drug and Alcohol Treatment Hotline provides information on alcohol and drug abuse, local treatment options, hotline counselors about to, you can speak with them about alcohol, drug, or your family problems. And you can call them at 800-662-HELP. That's 800-662-HELP, H-E-L-P. And here's where I say thank you to Gary Hendler, a real estate broker, being in recovery for how many years now?
It will be 36 years in May.
In recovery for 36 years come May, and host of Clean and Sober Radio that you can hear on some Beasley Media stations here. And of course, you can find the podcast here as well. And of course, if you are just joining us now and you'd like to hear the rest of the show, we do have a podcast at mix995wjbr.com. Gary, thank you for coming in today.
Well, thank you so much for asking me to, Laura.
Absolutely, anytime. I always enjoy hearing your tales. I'm Laura Lewis. This has been Focus on the Delaware Valley.